This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
Say hey.
Say who?
Swinging at the plate. Say hey.
Say who?
Say Willie. That giant kid is great. When he hits.
As I was growing up, baseball wasn't really my game. I've always been more of a basketball person. But there are players that are so talented, so stunning in what they have done and accomplished, whose reach is so far beyond the sport that they play, that their name is as known to the uninitiated as it is to the seasoned fan. Willie Mays is one of those names, one of those players. And that's become even more evident this week as we mourn the loss of the Say Hey Kid, who passed away at the age of 93 on June 18th. Welcome to KCBS In Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. Now, we could spend an entire in-depth episode talking about the highlights of Mays' career, but I'd like to speak not just about what Mays made happen on the field, but about the ripple effects of the life that he led and of who he was beyond the bat and the glove. And to help me on this journey is KCBS Radio's own morning sports anchor, Stephen Langford. Stephen, thanks so much for jumping into the co-host spot for this very special in-depth.
Yes, and I grew up playing baseball. That was the sport of my youth. Willie Mays was really a mythical figure more than a baseball player, just a legend. And we are joined by a very special guest, a longtime morning sports anchor here at KCBS and author of the original San Francisco Giants, The Giants of 58, the great Steve Bitker joining us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So the passing of Willie Mays, I mean, there's just so much to get to with his career, with the New York Giants, the San Francisco Giants, but wanted to start with his time in the Negro Leagues and specifically with the Birmingham Black Barons, where he got his start at a very young age. And baseball has put the stats into the database now from the Negro Leagues. And what we see from Willie Mays here is he only participated in 13 games, but I think there was a little bit more than that.
I think there were, Stephen. I think they could only use official stats that they had, basically official scorecards for,
right,
and
right,
play-by-play, and there's so much that's not there, sadly. But Willie actually started his pro career at the age of 16 when he was a student at Fairfield High School outside Birmingham. He started with the Chattanooga Choo-Choos, played briefly for them, and then went on to the Birmingham Black Barons in 47, 48, and into 49 before the Giants signed him when he was just 19 years old.
And what really drew the scouts to him when he was playing in the Negro Leagues? Because at the time, Jackie Robinson just broke the color barrier into Major League Baseball. Could not have been easy having to overcome that sort of hurdle, especially at that young of an age.
Yeah, Jackie was signed by the Dodgers in 1947. The Giants signed Mays in 1950. And there's a great story that goes along with this. In fact, many years ago, when I was in my 20s, I interviewed Eddie Montague Sr., who was one of the Giants' top baseball scouts. And the purpose of the interview and the story for the California Living section of the Sunday Chronicle was the experience of discovering Willie Mays. I mean, imagine being the scout who discovered Willie Mays. But it turns out that the Giants sent Eddie Montague Sr. to Birmingham to scout a first baseman, one of Mays' teammates named Alonzo Perry. Well, it didn't take Montague long to fall in love with the Say Hey Kid. In fact, he was only 19 years old, and Montague said he realized watching him play, hitting home runs to left field, to right field, making incredible catches, running the bases like a gazelle, that this was the greatest player he had ever seen. Sounds like hyperbole for someone so young, but that's how impressive he was to Montague. And that night, Montague saw Ray Blades in the stands. Ray Blades was one of the Brooklyn Dodger scouts. And Montague, as the game went on and was nearing its completion, Montague's eyes were frozen on Ray Blades, assuming that Blades was going to make a move on Willie. And Montague was trying to figure out, okay, what if I see him heading down toward the dugout? Ray Blades walked out of the stadium, and Montague was absolutely dumbfounded. His thought at the time was that maybe Blades was under instructions, as other scouts were who could see the Negro Leagues, that they had already hit their quota. They had not only signed Jackie Robinson, they had signed catcher Roy Campanella, and they had signed starting pitcher Don Newcomb. And now Willie would have been the fourth. But I discovered a day or two ago, when I saw a copy of a letter that Eddie Montague wrote about his experience, and I didn't even know this from my interview with Montague, that Blades was preparing an offer. Just having seen him, he didn't need to go down and talk to him. He had the Dodgers prepare an offer, and the Giants beat him to it.
With that that transition from the Negro Leagues to the minor leagues, all right, now you're starting to play you're in the minor leagues, but it's still part of Major League Baseball. What was that talent gap like? Was it a big one between the Negro Leagues and the minor leagues, or did it kind of prepare him for what was to come?
Willie didn't have any trouble hitting in the minor leagues. Mm. He was first assigned to their Class B, which I think in today's baseball, it might be something between A and double A. Teams had triple A teams, A teams, B teams, C teams, D teams. Some major league teams had 20 minor league clubs back in those days.
Wow.
Nothing like today. So he was assigned to Trenton, New Jersey. Hit 353 there. His one down experience was when they were on a road trip to Hagerstown, Maryland, and the hotel that the team stayed at wouldn't let him stay with his teammates. So, neat story. He had three white teammates, guys who never made it to the major leagues, and they drove Willie to a black-owned hotel and came back at 2 o'clock in the morning and opened his bedroom window. And Willie said, you know, when he heard somebody trying to open the window, he was alarmed. I don't know, he turned on the light, he looked up, saw three guys who were his teammates. The three guys came in and said they didn't want him to be alone in this hotel. They slept on the floor. They got up at the crack of dawn, went back to the team hotel, and then came back that afternoon in time to pick him up and drive him to the ballpark. And this kind of went on for the next couple of days until the series was over. He was then promoted to the AAA Minneapolis Millers and hit a mere 477 in 34 games, and the Giants were ready to call him up. He's 20 years old by now. Leo Durocher gets on the phone, says, "You're ready for the major leagues." Willie says, "No, no, no, I don't think I'm ready." I feel like I want to stay in AAA and maybe break some records in AAA. And Leo says, what are you hitting? And Willie said, 477. And Leo says, can you hit half that in the major leagues? And Willie says, I think so. And he was off to the major leagues. He started his major league career 0 for 12. Again, went to Leo and said, I'm not ready. I need you to send me back to the minors. Leo talked him off the ledge and said, you know, relax, you're going to be fine. He hit a home run the next game off Warren Spahn. Wow. And was named the National League Rookie of the Year at the age of 20. And then the Giants were trailing the Dodgers that August by 13.5 games in the middle of August. And the Giants won 37 of their last 44 games. Caught the Dodgers on the last day of the season. They tied with records of 96 and 68. They had a best of three playoff for the pennant, and it went naturally to a third and deciding game. Dodgers led 4-2 in the bottom of the ninth at the Polo Grounds, and the Giants had two on with one out. Bobby Thompson is the batter, and Willie Mays is on deck. And Willie Mays knows if Thompson gets on, whether he gets a hit or he gets a walk, Willie's coming up. Was Willie excited? No, he was panicked. Again, self-doubts entered in, and he even thought if Thompson got on, Leo would have taken Willie out for a pinch hitter. Willie really thought that. Nobody else did, but Willie thought so. Thompson hits a three-run homer, of course, and the Giants win it 5-4, and they go to the World Series, where they lost to the Yankees in six games.
Well, and you saying that part right there about the kind of lack of confidence that he was having and obviously had carried over where he wanted to keep spending time working on his game before even coming to the big leagues. That's amazing for me to hear when you look at all the accomplishments of Willie Mays, that underneath all of that was someone who, you know, maybe didn't always feel that way or feel that they were accomplishing the goals that they wanted to. Is that something that a lot of people were aware of about Mays, that
he felt
that way?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so at the time, and I don't think that self-doubt lasted very long. You know, he was named the National League Rookie of the Year. Then he goes into military service because the Korean War has broken out. He stayed with some other ball players, actually, minor and major league players, and they ended up playing exhibition games, you know, against local teams. I think he was stationed somewhere in Virginia.
Hmm.
And so he was there for nearly 2 years, two full seasons. He missed the 52 and 53 seasons and came back in 54.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say those exhibition games paid off, because what followed once he returned from service, Hall of Fame career.
Well, and even the first season. Yeah. I mean, imagine missing 2 years of Major League ball. He comes back. He hits 345 with 41 home runs, drives in 110. So he returned in 54. They were very big underdogs against the Cleveland Indians, who won like something 112 games that season and had the best pitching rotation in the game. And in the first game, the game that really tilted the entire series, Mays makes that incredible catch off the bat of left-handed hitting Vic Wirtz. There were two on, one out in the eighth inning, tied 2-2. Mays turns his back to the plate, runs full speed toward the center field wall, which is like 485 feet away, and maybe 10 feet shy. He catches it and in one motion does a 180 and fires the ball back into the infield. Now, from what Willie says, the runner at second, Larry Doby, had already reached third. When he realized Mays caught the ball, he sprinted back to second, tagged up, and barely made it to third. And Al Rosen, the former Giants GM, he was on first. He made it to second and scampered back to first base. Don Little, he is a left-handed reliever. He was brought in to get Vic Wirtz out. Wirtz hits the ball 480 feet. Little walks back to the dugout, looks at his teammates and says, I got my man. and they go on to sweep four and win the World Series.
That catch, just to focus on that athleticism. I mean, there's only really one camera angle that we have because it was...
Thank God we got that, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah,
it's the same shot.
But he ran, what, 50, 60 yards maybe to make that catch full speed and to have your back turned to home plate, not even really looking at the ball, and still manage to get and have the wherewithal to throw it in to stop the runner.
He says from the time he started running, he knew he was going to catch it.
Wow.
And he was thinking, all right, I got to get the ball back into the infield, because if you hit the ball 480 feet and it's caught, a runner from second base could easily tag up and score if he's waiting at the bag to tag up. So, yeah, incredible play. And he says that was nowhere near the greatest catch he ever made.
That performance in that World Series, that catch, it really almost set him up as the face of the Giants when they did move from New York to San Francisco. And having rewatched that Willie Mays doc on HBO, I think I've watched it like 3 or 4 times
already.
You know, he was the face of the franchise, and the move potentially wouldn't have even happened if they didn't have a guy like Willie Mays on their team.
Well, the move probably would have happened anyway, because the Brooklyn Dodgers, you know, were not successful in getting a new stadium to replace Ebbets Field. So they had decided, the O'Malley family, to move, but they needed the Giants to move, because otherwise you can't have one team move west of the Mississippi and be all there all by themselves.
Right.
You know, Major League Baseball said to the O'Malley family, you got to find another team to go out west with you, and he talked the Giants into it.
In Depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
And there's plenty of discussion around, you know, overcoming the racial barriers here in San Francisco at that time, specifically moving into an upscale neighborhood, and obviously not allowed because of his skin color. But then he persisted and eventually moved there. And that changed a lot of different things, housing discrimination laws in California and whatnot. Did that sort of
front page story, not just in the Chronicle, but the San Francisco News Call Bulletin, the San Francisco Examiner, the Oakland Tribune, front page story.
Did you get a sense that when you talked to him or as you watched him, did you get a sense that that really bothered him on the field at all? Did that impact his play?
He says it did not bother him a lot, and it was not as big a deal as the press made it out to be. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what he said. There was a house in St. Francis Wood on Mira Loma Drive that he put an offer on, and the owner, a white man, accepted the offer. He thought, hey, great, Willie Mays is buying my house.
Wow.
What could be better than that? But there were some neighbors that weren't so excited.
Really?
And wanted to stop it, but he ended up getting the house. And again, he says it was not that big a deal.
Well, and I'm glad that was brought up, because that was something I was curious about, because there were other ball players in that time who were, I think, taking a much stronger stance when it came to civil rights and to segregation and discrimination. And he did seem to kind of step away from that. I read a quote the other night where it was just him saying, I'm here to play ball, basically. That's what he was there to do.
Yeah. Michael Jordan experienced similar criticism. And you had Jackie Robinson, the role model for a civil rights leader in baseball, of course. Bob Gibson was outspoken. Bill White, former San Francisco Giant, early in his career, New York Giant. He was very, very outspoken. Mays, he said he felt that he could make the biggest difference by the the role model that he was, just showing everybody the proper way to treat people. And, you know, everybody's different, but that was Willie.
And from the 1954 World Series, that would be the only championship that he would win, but he came pretty darn close 8 years later.
He did. Well, yes, 1962 was an amazing season. Again, Giants-Dodgers finished tied for first. Giants caught him on the last day of the season. They won. They both finished with records of 101 and 61. Mays hit a game-winning homer in the bottom of the ninth inning in the final game to tie the Dodgers, who lost that day on a home run by Gene Oliver of the St. Louis Cardinals in the ninth inning. I mean, it really went down to the wire. When the Giants game ended, everybody stayed in the stadium, and the public address announcer was basically announcing the game, you know, on the PA mic, and everybody roared when the Dodgers lost. So the Giants had this three-game playoff. Again, they split the first two. Game three, the final game's at Dodger Stadium. Again, the Dodgers are leading 4-2 in the ninth inning. It's just like 1951. And again, the Giants rally. When they win 6-4, Mays had an RBI single in that ninth inning, and he also made the game-ending catch in center field. So they win the pennant. They go to the World Series. It's a seven-game series, of course. And the seventh game goes down to the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Yankees are leading 1-0. And the Giants get a bunt single from Matty Alou, rookie outfielder. And who comes up to the plate? Willie Mays. Two outs. And I am there with my brother. My parents, every year, the way you got World Series tickets, if your team was in contention, is you would send a check to the team expressing your interest in acquiring two tickets to the World Series. Every year we get turned down because there's way more fans than there are seats. In 62, we got accepted the year they went to the World Series.
Wow.
We were so excited.
Was this the first time you were seeing him in person?
Oh, no.
In person?
I started going to games in 1958, their first year. I was 5 years old. Fell in love with the game as a little kid collecting baseball cards. But, yeah, I started seeing. So I'm at the game with my brother. My parents let my brother and I go to the last game. And I'm singing this silly Giants fight song, you know, when the Giants come to. I'm singing it to myself. I'm thinking, if I keep doing this, he's gonna win the game.
Yeah.
So Mays lines a double into the right field corner. Matty Alou is rounding third. He's heading for home. No! The third base coach, Whitey Lockman, holds him up. And Willie McCovey lined out and the game was over. And Mays told me, because I spent 2 hours with him in his Atherton home interviewing him for that book I wrote on the 58 Giants. Naturally, I brought this up. And he told me he has always wished that he were the runner coming around third. He said the throw was slightly up the first base line to the plate. He could have slid around a sweeping tag from the catcher, Elston Howard. He always regretted he was not the base runner. And there was never a better base runner than Willie Mays was.
Outside of his, you know, exploits on the field, he was also known as kind of a peacemaker. And there's numerous examples of this, specifically with one member of the Giants who, you know, was a little, shall I say, despondent, I guess, to the Latin players on the team. And Willie Mays was the guy that kind of separated them and said, no, we need to come together. Like, when did he become that peacemaker? When did he assume that role? Was it in the later stages of his career? Was it early on?
I think it was early on in his career. I mean, I went to a game in 65, I believe, known as the Johnny Roseboro-Juan Marichal game, when it was in the middle of a heated rivalry. I mean, the Giants and the Dodgers really hated each other back in those days.
Yeah.
And tensions were always really, really high. And Marichal, Juan Marichal had hit Maury Wills with a pitch early in the game. And Roseboro threw the ball back to Sandy Koufax when the Giants were batting and clipped Marichal in the ear with the ball. This led to a benches clearing brawl. Roseboro took off his mask and charged Marichal, who was backing up toward first base, and swung his bat in self-defense panic and stupidity. But Mays was out there as peacemaker.
Hmm.
He put his arms around Roseboro, who was bleeding from the head, and brought him back to the dugout and got him some medical care. Mays was always that way, never got thrown out of a single game.
That speaks perfectly to, I mean, sure, he was competitive, but the way that he played with joy and how much he exuded that joy, that's who he also was off the field.
Yeah, but, you know, like many professional athletes, when the skills start eroding, it's tough to accept. It's tough for fans to accept, because Willie Mays spent his last 2 years with the New York Mets. In 72, he hit pretty well as a part-time player. He did not hit well in 73, batted just .211, played sparingly, wanted to retire early in the season, but the Mets owner, who was a former member of the Giants Board of Directors in New York, talked him out of it. It was really tough for him. And the toughest thing of all happened at the end. It was Game 7 of the World Series against the A's in Oakland. It was three games apiece, and the A's were up 5-1 in the ninth inning, and the Yankees had two on and two out. They had a left-handed batter coming up, Wayne Garrett, and Dick Williams, the manager, brings in a left-handed reliever to face him. I was watching on TV going, bring in Willie Mays to pinch hit. This is perfect.
Hmm.
Last opportunity for him to hit in his entire career. Who knows? He might hit one out. And Yogi Berra didn't call Willie. And the left-handed batter, Garrett, popped up to shortstop, and the game was over. And Willie was really, really hurt by that. He felt he had earned a chance to bat one more time. I mean, if you look at it the other way, you think, well, he's on the downside of his career. Berra figures the left-handed batter probably had a better chance at this stage of his career. Sure would have been nice to see Willie. But it was tough. It was tough for him, you know, the first 10 or 20 years after retiring. And I asked him at one point, is it hard to be Willie Mays? That was my last question when I interviewed him. And he said, very, very hard. He said he couldn't do many of the things that he would love to do. He loved going to football and basketball games, couldn't go. People always want autographs. They want pictures. He wanted to go out to eat, but unless he got a private room, he couldn't do that. He wanted to go shopping. He couldn't do that.
But that catch-22 of being such almost a mythical figure in other people's eyes. He is just a person at the end of the day, an amazing baseball player, but you don't get to be just a person in a lot of ways. And that can be difficult, I would say, to have to deal with, and difficult to let go of that type of life after so long of living it.
He was always very sensitive to people taking advantage of him. And what made it work later in life for him was Pat Gallagher, one of the Giants' longtime vice presidents and a very good friend of Willie. And Pat would set up public things for him where he'd be comfortable. And in fact, when I interviewed like 35 former players and coaches for my book, I got a hold of all of them by myself, except Willie, because I knew he'd blow me off. So I went to Pat.
Mm.
Pat went to Willie. Willie said, have him come to my house on such and such a day, and everything went great. So yeah, Willie was a very private person. I mean, early in his career with the San Francisco Giants, Orlando Cepeda was more popular with the fans because he was so gregarious and outgoing, and he was a rookie, so he was homegrown. And Willie McCovey in 59, a rookie, homegrown. And they were both big stars right away. And Willie was not as outgoingly personable, and a lot of fans looked at him as a New Yorker. But in time, he won them over, of course.
Well, this has been an amazing conversation, especially for me on my end. Like I said at the top, baseball has never been something I've known a whole lot about or watched a lot. My father handed down some cards to me, and I'm still holding on to those. No Willie Mays card in there, though, unfortunately. I'm bummed out about that. But I do have some other pretty big names. But it's been fascinating to hear all week the stories about Willie Mays, the player, Willie Mays, the man, and the person. And I'm so glad that we got to have this conversation here on In Depth. Steve Bitker, thank you so much for sharing your memories of him and your times with him and all the details of his life. Thank you so much.
Mary, it was my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Stephen Langford, for co-hosting with me this week. and helping steer the ship here. I appreciate it.
Of course.
You can find this episode and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. You can also hear in-depth episodes on the Odyssey app. You can download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS Radio. Thanks for listening. For KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
His Uncle Sam, he left the Giants in an awful jam. But now he's back, and he's Leo's joy.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.